This KFK podcast is presented by Bank of Colorado. Honesty, integrity, hard work. It's the way you live and the way we bank. Bank of Colorado has been a family-owned, community-focused bank for generations and will be here for generations to come. Bank of Colorado. There's only one. Member FDIC.
Clip, you want to set it up for us?
I'd like to, but I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, we'll just roll it.
And now, the whole show's clip of the day.
The clip of the day, because we've been talking about him, and this is just what you need to remember. LeBron James loves him some LeBron James. It was 16 years ago, Michael, on this date, that LeBron announced that he was taking his talents to the Miami Heat. Here's LeBron talking about that decision and, again, all the media hoopla that followed.
And this fall, man, this is very tough. And this fall, I'm going to take my talents to South Beach and join the Miami Heat.
Miami Heat. That was the conclusion you woke up with this morning.
That was the conclusion I woke up with this morning.
Why?
like I said before, I feel like it's going to give me the best opportunity to win and to win for multiple years. And not only just to win in a regular season or just to win five games in a row or three games in a row. I want to be able to win championships, and I feel like I can compete down there.
Was it always in your plan to go and play with Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh?
Well, I mean, I'm looking forward to it. To say it was always in my plans, I can't say it was always in my plans because I never thought it was possible. But the things that the Miami Heat franchise have done to be able to free up cap space and to be able to put themselves in a position this summer to have all three of us, you know, it was hard to turn down. I mean, you know, those are two great players, two of the greatest players that we have in this game today. And, you know, you add me, we're going to be a really good team.
There he was. He made the decision, Mike. We all talked about it for a long time. He scheduled a show. I believe it was on ESPN, wasn't it? He scheduled a show, an announcement, a decision show, and then he made his decision that he would be going to the Miami Heat. And again, a different player at that point. He was still the best player in the league by far. I mean, again, we're having a different conversation if he's the best player in the league. Yeah, you swallow some pride, but he's not the same guy.
I wonder, would he have that same TV show if he goes to Denver?
I don't think he'll make... I think he actually regrets that. I think he's actually admitted that if he had to do it all over again, he might not have made it such a spectacle.
And maybe people from Cleveland wouldn't have hated him quite so much?
Maybe. And, you know, I think even with this, some of this is out of his control, like what's happening right now. I mean, he's a free agent. His agent went on Max Kellerman's show and listed on his famous whiteboard all the teams that would make sense for LeBron to go to. And the agent and LeBron, they know exactly what they're doing. I mean, Rich Paul said that if the Knicks hadn't won a championship, there'd be no debate. LeBron would be playing for the New York Knicks. I don't know how true that is. He seems to believe it. So Rich Paul is kind of the guy acting on LeBron's behalf. He's the one stirring this drink right now. So, again, it's not LeBron doing it, but it's his agent doing it, and I don't think his agent's going to be doing these shows, and I know he has a good relationship with Max Kellerman, but he's not going to be doing these things if LeBron doesn't give him the green light. Now, again, this is different than the decision 16 years ago, but it's got some of the same feel. So even though a guy says he learned from his mistakes and he probably wouldn't do something like that again, you've got five or six franchises right now, and the Nuggets being one of them, that are just waiting at the edge of their seats for any kind of information, which all the reports are indicating that the trail has gone cold, that he's not really, they're not communicating with any of the teams right now. He did visit with the Cleveland Cavs, just kind of reminiscing, going back with old teammates and things like that. But I think Cleveland's maybe the favorite. Yahoo Sports reported that the 76ers, Miami Heat, and the Cavs are the favorites to land LeBron James. I think it would be odd if he goes back to Miami. That was a lifetime ago, Mike. Dwayne Wade's been retired for a while now. Chris Bosh been retired for a while now, and LeBron's still going, which is a testament to just how great he really is. He's still going 16 years later, and he could return to Miami. That would be odd. I would say Miami would be out, but I don't know. Go play with Giannis.
What if he goes to Miami, is there a year, and then goes back to the Lakers?
No, he's not ever going back to the Lakers. That's done.
I'm just saying, like, he's doubling up all his teams.
Yeah, he's... I mean, I never thought he would leave Cleveland after the second stint. I thought it was strange when he became a free agent that he left Cleveland and did it again. And then he goes to the Lakers. Finds a way to get Anthony Davis over there. I think the way he handled that, I mean, he turned kind of back into a beloved figure when he went to Cleveland, and then he went right back to, you know, I'm not saying just because you go to the Lakers, you're a heel, you're a bad guy, but the decision to leave Cleveland again, 9 years ago, was certainly strange. And it did not do him any favors. What's the best look? If he goes to the Sixers, I mean, you got to think the Sixers are going to be a legitimate contender. The Miami Heat certainly are a legitimate contender. So are the Cleveland Cavs. I mean, Miami was 43-39 last year. But obviously with the moves they just made, you have to think, you know, getting Giannis, they got Tim Hardaway Jr. You have to think the Miami Heat are going to be considered, even without LeBron, maybe not a favorite, but certainly a much better team. Cleveland, who just locked up Donovan Mitchell, they were a top four team in the NBA last year. Philadelphia was, I think they were a play. Were they a play-in team? I think they were a play-in team. But they've certainly made moves. Getting Jaylen Brown. Now they pair Jaylen Brown. I'll be curious to see how that works, but they're going to pair Jaylen Brown with Joel Embiid and Tyrese Maxey. You have to think the Heat would be considered. So all these are front runners. Every one of these teams today, I think you would consider a front runners. Denver, say what you will, they may not be OKC or San Antonio, but they would be considered at least a top five team in the West. The Lakers will be interesting with their new lineup. Minnesota, probably still going to be a top six team in the league. They've made some major changes too. Minnesota's one to keep an eye out for too. They're in this conversation. Not sure LeBron wants to go there, but they're one of the teams in the mix. But it's just fascinating thinking of, you know, again, people like to give Carmelo Anthony a hard time for how he left Denver. He could have done what LeBron did, knowing he was going to leave, but then let his contract run out and just leave you his home in the lurch with no ability to make a trade. Now you can argue, when did LeBron know that he wanted to leave? Was it after they lost in the playoffs his final year and then he made the decision? Yeah, and that's fair. But I will say Carmelo, like if Melo would have stayed with the Nuggets, they would have made it to the playoffs again. Wouldn't have been probably a real contender, but Carmelo let it be known to the organization that he was not going to come back. And so you might as well trade me midseason because he wanted out quickly. So, yeah, it was self-serving. I mean, he wanted to be a Nick yesterday. So he, to the organization, when the talks of a second contract extension, because he did sign a first contract extension, when talks of a second contract extension came up, as they didn't really move, he said, hey, guys, you might as well trade me. I mean, I don't know exactly how that conversation went down, but they knew he was not coming back. So they traded him. They ended up getting some good pieces that kept them in the playoffs. Actually, it was Danilo Gallinari's crew that gave them the won them the most games in franchise history, in regular season history, 57. But LeBron just, you know, decided that was it, and he did the free agent thing, and now, you know, he's doing the same thing to the Lakers, although, you know, a little different. Again, not the caliber of player. What kind of trade would he have commanded at this stage in his career? I don't know the answer to that. But 16 years ago, LeBron made the decision to take his talents to South Beach and play with Miami Heat, and they got two championships out of it. They went to, he was there for 4 years. They went to four NBA finals, lost to the Mavericks and the Spurs, but won at least two of them. 16 minutes after the hour, Keeling Me Softly with the Denver Post's Sean Keeler coming up next. It's The Whole Show powered by Mosquito Joe on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 at 1310 KFKA.
What's next for the Nuggets and the Avalanche this offseason? Keep it on Northern Colorado's Voice. 103.1 and 1310 KFKA for the latest.
In Colorado, local matters. It matters who you trust, who knows your name, and who's rooted right here in our state. I'm Sean Ostoff, president of Bank of Colorado, and we're staying grounded in the same values we've built on for generations. At Bank of Colorado, we stay true to what matters most. Local decisions, real relationships, and communities we call home. If you're ready for a bank built for Colorado and committed to it, choose Bank of Colorado. There's only one. Member FDIC.
This is Adam Matas with DNVR, the DNVR Bar, and the DNVR Nuggets Podcast, and you're listening to The Whole Show with Brady Hull.
Some call him genius, legend, ladies' man, the best to ever observe the game. We want to keep him humble, so we call him Sean. This is Keeling Me Softly with Denver Post columnist Sean Keeler.
21 minutes after the 1 o'clock hour, welcome back in. It is time for Keeling Me Softly with the one and only Sean Keeler with the Denver Post. Sean, there's a lot going on right now, man. We got Nikola Jokic making Nuggets fans feel a lot better than they did a week ago, saying he's going to finish his career with the Nuggets. You've got LeBron watch. You have this Seth Wickersham story, this novel of a story about Sean Payton, and, you know, days before the kickoff of the AFC Championship, and also a bunch of stuff surrounding it. My goodness, man. And the Rockies might be, maybe not good, but they're fun.
They're fun. They're fun guys. They're the term I used earlier this season for the White Sox. They're watchable. Like, you just want something watchable and not terrible. So they are, I think they're on a pace to lose 95 or 94
pretty
for
good.
FanGraphs.
Pretty good.
That's pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah.
We said anything under 100 was going to be great. You didn't mention Big 12 Media Days.
Big 12 Media Days.
That was the other one. And I think those are the major bullet points now. I'm just getting back from vacation now, and I'm not quite, as I told your producer, I don't think my brain's quite shifted into hitting. You know, in our world, you got to hit the ground running.
Yeah.
And the ground is running, and I am not.
It's,
so I look like I'm on an escalator running uphill, a downhill escalator right now. It's kind of how I would describe my mode.
Well, I'm assuming you're gearing up to go to Pac-12 Media Days. Oh, wait, that's not happening. So, yeah.
No, I like you, man. No.
Okay, Sean, you tell me. You're a reporter. You're a columnist. You go, you get quotes, and, I mean, you do a great job of it. I'm a radio guy. I take the stuff you write, and I pick it apart, Sean. Not yours, of course. But when you go to these media days, how do you feel about the Pac-12 not having a media day? Is it a big deal to you, or do you view it as, this is a great opportunity to preview the season, talk about the issues surrounding not only the conference, but all of college football. How do you view the Pac-12 not having a media day?
I mean, me personally, it doesn't ruffle my feathers because, like a lot of legacy media, we're having to look at how we do things a little differently on a couple of levels. I don't think, objectively, if I were a fan, I wouldn't love it just because I think you need all the forward attention and PR and spin that you can control that you can get. These things are just basically, I mean, traditionally, I couldn't tell you, I mean, the Big Eight used to have a Skywriter. So the Big Eight used to fly people because the late, great Chuck Ninus, who lived around here, became a friend late in his life, and I certainly admired his work for years and years. When he ran the Big Eight, they had something called the Skywriters. Are you familiar? Well, you're probably not familiar with
No,
that.
No.
Like, to start the season or during preseason camps in August, and I could be screwing this up entirely because it was part of my youth, but it was, I'm sure there's someone like somewhere, Terry Fry, shaking his fist at me going, no, I was on one of those. They would fly people from campus to campus. The Skywriters Tour is what they'd call it. Like, leagues paid for this kind of attention, specifically with legacy media, because there was no internet. You had to quote the newspapers and TV stations and radio because that's all you had. So the philosophy to preseason was always any attention is better than none at all. So, yeah, I don't think it's great. I don't think it's catastrophic. You'd want some – I mean, basically it's about getting ESPN and Fox's attention, to be blunt, and CBS to some degree too. At least of the big three, NBC certainly has some Big Ten games, of the networks that are paying for this stuff and where your business partners are. It's a curious decision. I don't know that it's a fatal one, but I don't know that it's one that I would have made. I would think you would have won a flying start and to have as many people to this as possible and to make a show of it. But maybe a lot of legacy media were involved, although that doesn't really matter anymore post-pandemic. You could have an online Zoom thing, which wouldn't be great, but you can repackage this in a lot of ways that are cost effective that maybe don't require travel. But it is unusual, especially when the Big 12 goes so dang early, which I presume is so they can have the facility or just to be the first out of the gates, because any college football stuff before the All-Star game, baseball All-Star game, to me is stupid.
Sean Keeler joining us. It is way early, yeah, for the Big 12, but having the media days, of course. Now, Coach Prime gearing up for a very important season. Sean, we were talking about it earlier, kind of just going through the schedule. Now we're getting closer to that time. I just have this, well, depending on who you ask, if it's a bad feeling or a good feeling, I have a bad feeling for Buffs fans that this is not going to be, at the very least, even a bowl season.
Well, they're an interesting case. Because really, you hate Prime, you hate, you know, back to the haters. No, I'm fascinated by them on a number of levels, because their schedule and their defense and their history, well, the history we kind of don't know because everything is up and down, up and down. Their roster is better than what people predict their record will be. How does that sound? And so I'm trying to split the difference where I don't know that it's a 9-win team. I don't think it's a 3-win team. I think we've kind of, you and I have constantly sort of towed that the very boring middle ground of, well, they could win 4-7. I haven't moved off that, and I haven't moved down. And I read Bill Connolly, who's just strictly looking at it as a mathematical proposition at ESPN.com. And he's in the computer, say they'll win, I think, 4.5 or 4.6 games. And, well, that sounds about right. But he's like, but I love Danny Scudero. I love the kid from Miami. I love the kid from Tennessee. I love the Brendan Marion hire. And the things that are subjective that the computer, that AI, cut me off, AI. The things that AI can't see doesn't care about, we see and we know. Danny Scudero is a good player. I will wager you a beverage of your choice that Danny Scudero will be at least a second team Big 12, all Big 12 player if he's healthy. Like, he's really good. So, I mean, there are pieces there, even if everything is so kind of screwy and different and unique and transient. You know, They just don't have Travis and Shadur. And that's the thing, is you keep going back to that time and again. And I think what Deion Sanders has to prove, not, and doesn't care what I think, or he does a little, but what he has to prove to people who aren't me, who are critical or dubious of where they're going, is can they do this without two Hall of Fame retired jersey players, right? And let's not go down that road again. But Travis, undoubtedly one of the best players, if not the best player they've ever had. Can you do this without that frontline talent? I think this season's going to fail a lot that way. Because there's a lot of – the Big 12 is still pretty gray. That's the good and bad about that league is I think other than Texas Tech and maybe BYU to some degree, Utah has some continuity, but you've got a new head coach there for the first time in decades. So how is that going to go? I mean, there is always an opportunity to surprise in the Big 12 because there is real parity there. And maybe you win some of those close games, you can do that. I think the question becomes – very simply for CU is can you score 30 points a game, because that really has been their benchmark for winning and losing, and you needed an NFL quarterback and a top two draft pick to make that happen consistently. And then when you lost that, it didn't. You played your backups last year and it looked like a team of backups who were could have moments but couldn't finish. Which one of those are you? And the truth is probably in the middle. Let's be really boring and split the difference and say they win six. I think it could be kind of a minor bowl team, and the idea that you build on that with Julian Lewis is not out of the realm of possibility. I don't think it's a much higher ceiling than 7 wins, though. I think that would be a lot of Kool-Aid sipping. But there's talent. It's just a matter of whether there's coaching and whether there's the ability to finish those close games that better coaching and better strategy will help you to do, which clearly, according to Julian Lewis, they didn't have last year. I'm sure you saw it.
Yeah, I wanted to get. What is that? Because when I hear that, we were out there just in the phrase he used was, it can be used for other things too, Sean. Free balling, I think, is what he said. We're just kind of free balling it out there, just kind of running around.
That means something different than stocks. When they come from the World Cup, when the Tartan Army comes to Boston, freeballing means something completely different.
Yes. So you got him saying, that's kind of what we did last year. And I think, okay, that would be all well and good if you have a new coach for this year. And now you're looking back going, wow, just how bad was it? But that was under Coach Prime's leadership that they apparently didn't have a real clear plan on offense.
Yeah, it was under Pat Shurmur's leadership, which goes back to something, or lack thereof. CU's offensive coordinator in 2024 plays for the Cleveland Browns now. It was always Shador. And when Sean Lewis pushed back two and a half, three years ago, he got out. They went, nope, it's me or him. They went, yeah, it's him. So bye-bye. This will be a little different, maybe. It certainly looked like they were making it up as they went last year offensively. And I think one of the things that we can't this year clearly, you call it an excuse, but call it a fact. Deion Sanders wasn't around at this time last year very much. And it seemed like to a lot of people, I heard over the summer as a few people going, dude, he wasn't there in June. Like, you have to be there. July is yours. And yet you'll see, between like spring ball and media day, he was dealing with the cancer stuff. Fun and good, but that is not insignificant in terms of the time, the months lost. And we've talked about this last year. They look like a team that had 2 months missing, at times. And it's easy to point to that and say, well, there was your gap and that's just a life thing. And that's not anything you can control, But B, you don't have that now. So I guess the good and the bad is they could always kind of lean on that and say this was always going to be a lost year. He didn't say that last year because he won't say that. But you got the feeling that it could be, and then ultimately it was. And once it got going bad, you just couldn't quite square it away, Iowa State notwithstanding. But you don't have that this year. So if they're 1-4, which I don't think they will be, or they're 1-5 or something, you can't look at that and go, well, our coach was getting chemo, our coach was doing this and wasn't around. Everyone is around. Everyone is present. Deion Sanders is present. Everyone has been really, really hands-on with this. Also because they want to get 3-9 out of their mouths, and they have a new boss. The guy ultimately you know, doing Deion Sanders' job. No one does Deion Sanders' job of you, but the person who technically is supposed to do it is a different guy. And it's not the guy who hired you. And in any normal situation, when you're a 3-9 football coach who makes $10 million, I mean, let's be real about that, and the financial aspect of this, if you have another year like that, your new boss is going to wonder what you're worth to this. And he's going to ask questions that you're not going to like. And we know we know anything about Deion Sanders. He's not going to take questions he doesn't like. So, you should have had a drum roll ready for that. You should have had the
come on, Michael.
Come on. Yeah, no, it's fine. We're all getting back out of vacation mode with this. So, I mean, I don't know if we wanted to go down this rabbit hole today because there are so many rabbit holes.
There's a
right
lot.
Now in front range sports, but they are fascinating to me. I mean, they really are, because I think it's sort of a talent versus coaching thing. And for a Sanders team to be good, the talent has to be so good, as it was 2.5 years ago, has to be so good that you can basically overcome yourself. And it wasn't last year. It's better by all accounts now. And we'll see, I mean, talent-wise, we'll see if the coaching has made up for, I mean, it'd be hard to make up any worse than Pat Shurmur. I think we're just presuming that anything better than a negative is a positive, even if it's a net neutral. So, yeah, I mean, is that worth 2 wins? It might be, and then you're at 5. I think the question, we're going to bring the Rams into this, the question for CU and CU is largely the same, in that they both could go 5-7 if
sure.
you do the math with
yeah.
that schedule.
Yeah.
And I would ask you, in both cases, is that good enough? CSU, I would say, yeah, because it's year one, and I've had people immediately, in response to the stuff I've written recently, say, no, Jim Mora's got to be a 7-win. We got him to be a 6-7-win, 8-win coach right away. And then, Deion, it's year 4, and you're 5-7. You go, yeah, we improved, but.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, on the Rams side, Sean, I look at it and say, yeah, expectations might be to be a bowl team, but if you're not firing anybody. You know, with Colorado, I didn't think we'd ever be to this point where it's like, if it's a really bad season, yeah, there's a pretty big, significant chance that you move on from Coach Prime at the end.
Ooh, yeah.
No?
No, the money. I mean,
Yeah, what's the buyout? They can't buy him out, can they?
So, yeah. It's a 36. It might be at like 20. I'm just doing this off the top of my head, but it's in the 20s. Like, they don't have $28 million lying around. They just don't. Like, let's just be real about this. And Deion knows this, and this was all baked in. There are a lot of people with power who go into something without a plan. I will never, well, at least without a financial plan. I will never accuse Deion Sanders of not having a good financial plan for how he handles things this way. So, yeah, I mean, would 5-7 get Deion fired? No. I don't think it would. And are you going to run coordinators again? Yeah, probably, but he'll do that anyway. Like, it's the least safe position in football is to be Deion Sanders' offensive coordinator.
Well, and Sean,
because
he's got,
you're the first one to go.
And his new offensive coordinator, Brendan Marion, he has been he's been all over the place. Every single year, he's somewhere else. So, I mean, the odds of him sticking around with the Buffs, whether they succeed or don't succeed, I wouldn't bank on it.
And I get now, I'm getting different people who I like, well, many of whom I'd say have 2 out of 3 who like Brendan okay, and then I'll get someone saying, yeah, he burns hot and fast, you know, which is the Jim Harbaugh code for, you'll get on your nerves. And I went, oh, that's going to be good. That's going to be great with Deion. That'll work out wonderfully. And maybe that stops. Maybe this is an environment where whatever doesn't suit him well, or his run people wrong, doesn't do that here. They certainly have doubled down with him and with the personnel staff on the high school recruiting front. I mean, they've got, I think, the number 3 class in the Big 12 right now. I mean, they're acting like they've got a 3-year plan. They may not have one, but they're acting like it. And this is the, and I'm positive that not just the sting of last year and looks as if it's become an entire Buffs combo again. How do we always do that? You and me.
It kind of works that way. Yeah.
It's how it works. Yeah, but he definitely had to go to Fernando Lobo and say, at worst, here is my 3-year plan for your next $30 million investment, as you would with any boss.
or any supervisor. So I think they have one. It's just a matter of how well they act on it, you know, this year on the field, and we'll see.
Yeah. Sean, next week I want to get to, if you have time, or maybe even later this week, we're out of time now, but I would love to get your thoughts on the Joker stuff, the LeBron stuff, and Sean Payton as well, because I thought that article, it was very long. There was a lot of things that I was kind of like, okay, I'm kind of bored. But then, bam, I would get interested again. So, fascinating stuff.
What was your favorite part of the Payton article? What was the most head-scratching? Because it was all things. It was literally a movie.
Yeah, I think probably the Belichick thing, I know that one stands out. The fact that Sean would be saying, hey, I would totally be willing to take, you know, to take sidecart to Bill Belichick so he could get his record. But then I asked the question, I'm like, what if that happened? What if ownership actually went along with Sean Payton and Belichick was good? What would you do? I mean, does he stay as Sean Payton, the OC, is going to fire the head coach? I mean, that one was a head scratcher, and then the 4th and 11 going forward on the idea of going forward on whatever that was it 4th and 11 on their own 38 yard. So those were the two big ones. A lot of fascinating things, though, for sure.
Yeah, there is. And the short answer with LeBron, we're not in the top three, and I told you we weren't going to be in the top three. So
no.
I think we talked about it last week. I'll refer to what we talked about that. They're going to be at the table. They're not at the head of the table. I'd be shocked if they were.
Yeah, I was right here with you, man. Sean, appreciate it, my man, and we'll catch up with you soon.
All right, sounds good. See you. Thanks.
Sean Keeler, Denver Post. That's Keeling Me Softly. 40 minutes after the hour. Michael, yeah, the buyout for Coach Prime. That's fascinating. If you fire him before December 31st, not that we're even there, but if you did, you'd have to – it's $20 million?
I think it's officially 26.6, but
$10 million
this year, $6 million the year after that, $4 million in 2028. But I see another source that says $26.6 million.
That's insane. That's insane. But smart by Coach Prime. 41 minutes after the hour, let's get the latest on the local sports flash.
Hey, this is Warren Jackson, former CSU wide receiver, and you're listening to The Whole Show on KFK. All of the lights.
Yeah, don't forget, at the end of the day, it's a business for Coach Prime, for Nikola Jokic. You're in this big, massive money-making machine that is college football or the NBA, and you're good at what you do to get to that level, so you take advantage of it.
And I
believe in that. I've always believed in that. You make as much money as you possibly can. That's what Joker wants to do. That's what Coach Prime clearly did when he signed his contract extension, was to make sure he was taken care of. Ain't nothing wrong with that. You don't blame Coach Prime for asking for it. You blame the Buffs for signing a $20+ million buyout if you had to move on from him this year. I don't think anybody really thought, though, that we'd even be at a point this summer where we're saying, what if he's bad this year? Year one is, what if he's bad this year? Nobody cares. What if he's bad year two? Nobody cares. What about year three? Still probably not. But year four, is this different now? Is it different?
I mean, this is so weird. No one expected. He was supposed to be really good, and they were okay that first season, and they've just suddenly tanked. And 3-9 for the money that you're giving him.
Yeah, I think, again, the buyout's a lot.
You really want to bite the bullet?
A buyout's a lot, but if you're bad this year, how do you expect to be much better? I mean, you're in the Big 12. You're trying to make something of yourself. Well, it's better than the Pac-12, right? That was the move.
Yeah.
That you were making the move, and you were moving on up. New athletic director, but yeah, where do you come up with the scratch? If that happens, and it might not. You win 5 games, you're probably not doing anything.
You're going to have to find a millionaire who really wants to buy that debt for you.
I guess. 48 minutes after the hour. Michael, what did we learn coming up next? It's The Whole Show powered by Mosquito Joe of Northern Colorado on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKN.
The
The summer months can be busy.
I'm busy!
Keep up with the latest in local news, sports, and weather on Good Morning NoCo, weekdays 6 to 10 on Northern Colorado's Voice. 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Hey, Ram fans, this is Ali Farokmanesh, your head men's basketball coach at Colorado State University, and you're listening to The Whole Show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
What do we learn on this 8th day of July? We learn that it's going to be very difficult, even if Coach Prime does have a bad year, to move on from him. Sean brings up the buyout, which you looked up, confirmed. Not good. Not a good situation for the Buffaloes. We also learned that Nikola Jokic, he's a businessman too, kind of like Coach Prime. They're making business decisions. You get to this level, you make that money as much as you possibly can. Also, Sean Payton was ready to risk it all on a 4th and 11 on his own 38 in the playoff game against the Bills. Michael, what'd you learn today?
Well, actually, I think you all learned something, a very valuable lesson. You learned what Tremonisha is, which is a great opera.
Nope. Nobody learned that. Nobody learned that. They learned that you like opera.
I do
like
opera.
Which I don't think surprises anybody.
I am a very sophisticated man.
Do you like wear, do you have like a monocle and a top hat and a cane when you go? I would imagine when you go to the opera, that's what you're sporting.
I wear a bright orange tuxedo. I've never been to an opera, and that would be a bucket list.
Are you serious?
Well, I went to like my niece's CSU opera thing. But
you would go to an opera?
I'd go to an actual professional opera.
Wow. And you'd wear a bright orange suit?
Like Lloyd? I'd have to buy one.
Like Lloyd and Dumb and Dumber?
No, mine would be like a lot more burnt orange. His was a lighter orange. More like a Tennessee Volunteers orange.
You still have the Dumb and Dumber thing down though. Probably. Yeah.
I do kind of have that bowl cut going right now. I gotta get rid of that. I gotta get a haircut.
Well, good luck, man. So that'll do it. We'll be back at it on Thursday show. Is it already Wednesday? Is it already Wednesday, Michael? I'm losing track of time.
Yeah, it didn't feel like Wednesday.
No, it's the heat. It's the heat that does it. It's not actually the heat. It's the humidity that'll get you.
I think it was also like we had so many events last week.
Oh,
that
we got a big event
this week off.
We got another big event on Friday.
I'm sick that day.
Can the listeners beat the hosts at Back 9 in Timnath? No, they did not ask you nor me to golf in this. They did not want us to represent the station golfing. It's probably a good plan.
Who's golfing then?
Not us.
I feel like
Tanner
the listeners
Swain,
would want
Bruce Dick,
to golf
Mike Danson, Brian, and Derbs. Brian and I will be broadcasting. So it'll be a lot of fun. All right, Mike. That's going to do it for us. We'll be back at it on a Thursday. Good night, Northern Colorado.
This KFK podcast is presented by Bank of Colorado. Honesty, integrity, hard work. It's the way you live and the way we bank. Bank of Colorado has been a family-owned, community-focused bank for generations and will be here for generations to come. Bank of Colorado. There's only one. Member FDIC.